miss a lot of Eskimo. Ice, you know, ice. Traveling from South Harbor to Tuck. Depends on the ice conditions.
Yes.
And then when they got to Tuck, they'd stay there for a while, but you know, Tuck is not far compared from Sask to Tuck.
Yeah.
So from Tuck to Iqaluit wasn't far. They'd come up to Iqaluit and have some time there, pick up supplies, and they'd all go back. And if their traveling was good, then if the ice, it always depended on ice for their smaller boats. They always got back to Sask Harbor. Then nobody called them Sask Harbor. Then they always said Banksland.
Banksland.
And that's why this, the name of my granddad's place that I'm talking about, that where he stayed, is Kaumayuk. It means bright place. Kaumayuk. My granddad always liked names that were...
Did he give the name to the place?
Yeah, he gave the name to that place, Kaumayuk. And John Dillon's place was Annareg. I don't know what that means now, Annareg. It might... A lot of times I always think if they only put Anyarik, Anyarik, well maybe that's where it came from. Anyarik means two cousins, no, cousins, two
mm-hmm.
cousins. And the name of it is Anyarik, Anyarik. So it could be that, place of two cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was the wool kiss and the carpenters there and their cousins. Now I wouldn't really say, but Anyarik means two cousins. It never occurred to me till now to realize what it meant. But they used to call that place Bankslanders,
mm-hmm.
place where Bankslanders stayed. You know, they just said, you know, it says a Bankslanders place. They knew, and all these Bankslanders, all used to be quite a few houses there. And then during, after the Bankslanders started finding easier ways or maybe better boats to travel, and not so many people
mm-hmm.
going across to Bankslant, that they stop coming to the Delta for winter, or maybe they finally smarten up and learn when to start back. And a lot of times they'd start back and always had to turn back because of ice flow.
That would be, you're talking now about the 40s when the Bankslanders came
mm-hmm.
here.
It would be in the early 40s.
Yeah.
And then John settled into that place. And this place, it used to be a place where my husband's parents stayed, Amos Tama. He used to go to the Bankslant whenever he could go across there too. But then this used to be his place. But through some talk, you know, when people started registering areas.
Yes.
And then through some way or another, anyway, there was a pretty big squabble between Joe and old the Michael Tuma there. The oldest brother in the Tuma family, Amos Tuma family.
You mean old Amos's brother?
Old Amos's son is Mike. The oldest son is Mike.
Oh, isn't Colin his son?
It's his son.
But the oldest one?
The oldest one is Mike. Colin is way later.
Lost.
There's Michael, Madeline, Olga, Harry, Roy, he's now dead, clubbed to death in Edmonton. Let's see now, there's Michael, Madeline, Olga, Harry, Roy, Colin, Agnes, Mary, Donald. And they lost a couple in between
mm-hmm.
Madeline and Mike.
Mm-hmm. And there was a dispute over the right to travel between Mike and
Joe, Joseph Kaiglik. See, it's because the Tumas tried to say that they stayed in that place longer, so therefore they should get that registered in the area. They didn't go for it really for the rats, but it was a very good fishing place. It's real, all you had to do is you know, it's sort of a bank, and there's a flat, flat down there where they used to all pitch up tents. And there's a creek on this side and a little river on this side, and that's right open to the Mackenzie.
Uh-huh.
It's a real nice looking little place. This point here,
yeah,
this is where the house was. And there used to be a house here, but that's all done, you know, by the Banks landers used to stay there. This is a small creek. This is a small river. Now this
becomes the Mackenzie.
This is the Mackenzie here. This point used to come way out. There was lakes there,
mm-hmm.
a couple of lakes. And this is the Mackenzie, because this goes this way really. That's the Mackenzie. This point used to come way out. And the Mackenzie is way over here, you see. And these are lakes here, trees. Now this point is cut down to about here. All these lakes are washed off. All this is cut off by Mackenzie ice.
Yeah.
And here is the mouth of the creek. We have fish nets set along in here and here in the summertime. Yeah, in the river and in the creek. You can have two fish nets, like it's right close to each other, and you can get about 3-4 tubs a day. But now it's not as good. You still get about 2 tubs a day.
What kind
of
fish?
All white fish and jackfish.
In
a creek.
What season?
Well, as soon as the water clears up enough.
In the spring.
Uh-huh. Till fall. And then right after freeze up, this is where we dig these holes and jiggle. And
for what kind of fish?
Large jackfish, conies. We could get as much as to 3,000. When one fall, we got 3,000 jiggling there.
Yeah.
And along here, they have
in the Mackenzie.
Fish nets. But this is there's a creek about here again. This creek, you know, it goes way in there and then comes out through here. So this is like an island.
Yeah.
But this is very strong current, and where when water rises and gets bad, the wood always be washed in there, and then that tears up our nets. But that's good jiggling too in the fall. It dries fast, but it's good jiggling. And this side doesn't dry as fast because it's got deeper lakes at the end here. That's when always at the end of the creek, when the creeks are running into lakes, as they're all good fishing, jiggling and fishing. And there's good fish in them always.
The jackfish are coming out of the lakes.
The jackfish, whitefish are coming out of the lakes.
But the whitefish are going up the streams.
Yeah, but...
in the spring.
Yeah, but a lot of times you can set fish net. We never ever tried setting fish net in a lake because some parts of the creek is, you know, pretty shallow. And anyway, we were getting enough where we were. Maybe that's why they never ever tried in the lakes. In some lakes, along the delta, if you set fishnet in a lake, you can get big whitefish. And lake whitefish are the best fish. They're fat and never soft. You know, they're good fish.
Do they stay in the lake all winter long?
I don't think in the winter. I don't know. I don't think in the winter, though. But I do know that lake fish, we always can tell a difference is when you cut them open and you cut the gizzard, like, you know. It's always black inside the gizzard. That's lake wheat they're eating. They had, this was so good for fishing, like that it was mostly for fishing. It's pretty good trapping area. But you see, even in fall, it's good duck hunting and fall hunting because it's right in the Mackenzie. And it's right where these big reef or barges pass all the time, and you can see ships go by. But that's a very nice little spot there.
And how did the dispute come out?
Joe, I don't really know, but I guess my granddad started living in this place 4 miles back, you see, early. And Joe had claimed that he always hunted this area and everything, and anyway, the old man lost out. Joe won that area. I don't really know how
did the dispute come to the game warden, or was it settled among the people?
No, it came through the game warden. Colin's mother is a very old, hard woman, is real hard ache. She hard to give up on anything, so I don't think she'd ever given up, you know, but the game warden had settled it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, somehow or another Joe won that. And the reason he fought for that was, you see, not long afterwards, all this side of this house is Joe's area, the registered area. All this side and part of behind the house he gave to John when John got married. And I could, it's just, granddad is just a river like that. And a little creek there, and there's his house. But there's a creek there. This creek goes in this way. There's his house there. And further up, all, as soon as the sun starts coming January, you can start jiggling up there. And but it's not very far to John's place. I walk there a lot of times.
Now, could you tell me what happened when you started to go to school? When you went to the Anglican residential school in Fowler?
Well, I guess I didn't go to school in fall, like in September.
Oh.
But all of a sudden there was a Miss Fulton. She was then, she's a Mrs. Stewart now, sheriff. He comes with a cord all the time.
From McLavick?
From the Yellowknife.
Oh, from Yellowknife.
Scotty Stewart, the sheriff. He's married to her now, and I think that I heard that she had cancer now. But she was Miss Fulton then, and she fell in love with me when she seen me. And I've always went to the school to see her. I mean, she always asked my mom to make, you know, take me up there to see her.
When you people came into Iqaluit.
When we
to
came
play.
To Iqaluit, yes. And so after a real, my mom would never like to part with me. Well, my mom was not so much as my auntie. My auntie wouldn't hear of me going to the school. I mean, she wanted me to go to school, but you had to leave your children unless they made their dwelling in Iqaluit. And there was maybe 3 or 4 going to the day school in those days. But mostly in the residential, they had to board right in. And she couldn't bear to leave me there, because I've never been away from home, you see. But I cried and I carried on, and I usually got my way. So I got my way to go to school. It was in February, about the 12th of February, 1945. And I remember it was about the 12th, because after 2 days in school, it was Valentine's Day, and I got the most cards in school. And my sister was in school, and my sister, while granddad was still in, you see, Eva was 3 years older than me,
mm-hmm.
almost 4. But they got it all crooked in their records always. She was going to 4 when I was born. So when she was about 7 or 6, why they let her go is because Donald, my mom liked Donald, and Donald had to go to school in Iqaluit, and he'd be lonely without any family. So to cheer him up, they sent Eva along with him.
Huh.
This was through the boat St. Rock that went to Cambridge Bay and back.
Mm, yes.
So Donald and Eva went to school from Cambridge Bay to Iqaluit for the whole winter, and we didn't see them again until the next summer. And I think this is another reason, number 2, why granddad came to the Delta, is because he wouldn't stay away from us when we were in school. My granddad was very close to all of us. And then there was some cousins, the Wingnick girls, like Helen was there.
Cyril's daughter.
Cyril's daughter, Helen. He had quite a few children too. And it was about that same year that his wife, I don't even remember her name, of course he'll come across sometimes. It was that year that his wife got TB. I think it was TB because she was just hemorrhaging blood, you know. And she died shortly after she went in the hospital. And then it was that same month in February that where Ruth, she's 2 years older than I am, 1 or 2 years she's older, she's now in Cambridge Bay,
who
married
is Ruth?
To Nels. Ruth is the daughter of Cyril. See, there's from his first wife, he was married only once. But the wife he married had a daughter named Jenny. Jenny Oscar now. No, no. She was Jenny Oscar, then she's Jenny Kievig now. She's married twice. She had Jenny and also Otto.
Oh, I see.
And then when he got married to her, they had Bessie. She's in Edmonton now living. Bessie and Katie, she died in 1947. 47, I think it was. See, that TB went around in our back family. Says his wife died with TB. Katie died with TB. There's Bessie, Katie, Helen, Ruth. I don't know if Ruth comes next, either Fred or Ruth. And then there's Jimmy. Fred, Ruth, and Jimmy.
Ruth was in school with you?
She came in. Ruth and Jimmy both came in. Helen and Fred were already in school.
Uh-huh.
And Ruth and Jimmy, you see they're the two youngest.
Yes.
Oh yeah, there's Margaret too, the very youngest. She was too young to go in the school then. And I think she stayed back with her oldest sister.
A lot of relatives there.
Mm-hmm. But Jimmy and Ruth were both brought into school because of their mother going in the hospital. And that way, then I know that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because from back when we came from Cambridge, we stayed in Tuck for a short while. But then that's where I got to know my cousins, or
the
Wingnecks. That's where I got to know them. And Granddad said once in a while they came across in the summertime to Tuck, you know, for a holiday. Granddad went to Tuck for a holiday, but I never remembered those times. But then I remembered Ruth there and her mother. And I remember her mother as used to. Well, Ruth is not the real daughter of Searle also. She used to drink quite a bit, the mother. This is what I remembered about her. But she was very nice. So while married to her husband, when her husband is out working or something, I guess she fooled around or something, and then Ruth was born. So she's very light and different looking from the family. She's a very nice looking girl. She's married to Nels Polk now in Cambridge. Two children.
Polk?
Uh-huh. Anna Polk's son. Ellen Binder, Nels Polk, our brother and sister. Otto and Ruth, our brother and sister.
so they cross married.
Yeah. And that was the happiest time I remembered, because
in
I knew
tough.
Ruth. No. No,
oh,
in school.
School.
It's when Ruth came. It was a funny time to be happy that her mother was sick in hospital. But then, you know, when you're small, you don't think of these too much. But it was the happiest time of my life when I seen who should come into the school but Ruth. And Mr. Gibson, Reverend Gibson, the principal, he really promised on his word to my mom that he'd let me go after 1 month if I didn't like school, you know. But then when Ruth came in, it changed everything. I wouldn't dare leave her in school alone.
You didn't like it at first?
No, I liked
it.
You liked it.
You said you did.
I liked it. I cried. I threw the tantrum and everything to get in school. But then when Ruth came, I had an excuse, you see. Mom know how close I was to Ruth. And know for the few times I've seen her, we were attached together like sisters. And then after then, we were always stuck together. You know, I told Mom that I wouldn't leave Ruth for anything in the world, and I was with her always.
Until the summertime when you went home?
Well, in the summertime I'd go home at the end of June, and Ruth would go back to Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
But in July we'd go for every summer we used to go to Tuck for holiday. Through some of the, this is something I mean about a lot of things, a lot of us still talk about it. It's long ago there used to be schooners,
yes.
A lot of schooners. And at night, you know, about the 15th of June, it's always close season for ratting. So about the 16th, 17th, 18th, we'd stay up late at school, you know, sneaking. Of course, we'd pretend to sleep before supervisor come around, but we'd hear the horn honking on the river, you know, the boats blowing the horn. We'd all run and scramble to the windows to look out to see whose boat that was. And they always got fish hanging on the boat, you know, like a clothesline or something. Like, and on the mast, they got fish hanging. And all on the side is dried rats.
These were coming into a clavic?
Into a clavic. Always after adding. And we know one boat in those days, they don't just think of one family. They think of other families that's got no big boats to come in with, you know, unable to come in. And some would take two or three trips to get other families. But a few families, as much as the boat can haul, used to come into town.
The people with schooners would pick them up
in the camps. And a lot of schooners came, and those were the times that was real good, because then we know everybody's coming in.
Would you be able to see them in town?
Yes, we had chores to do in school. And every afternoon before school started, we'd all go for a walk. You know, all the girls would all dress up, and that somebody who was in charge of us that day for our walks would take us for a walk, and they'd take us along by the river bank to see who'd come in, and the tents would be pitched up. And Saturdays, we were allowed to go out from 1 to 7. And all winter this happened, but in the summertime it was the best time. In wintertime too, of course, everybody came in for Easter, for Christmas, for Rat Sunday. Rat Sunday, you know, they call
Rat
it
Sunday.
Rat Sunday. They call it Rat Sunday because everybody goes to church, and everybody give their, well, what they call their, what they get out of their rats, they give to the Lord, they say. It's a collection.
That'd be after
Easter? That would be after ratting, about the 17th, somewhere about June. It would be depend on when all the people would be in, you know, when all the people from outlying settlements would be in. And, you know, they give so much of what they catch. They don't have to. This is up to them to give. And in those days, that little Anglican cathedral just loaded everybody. Everybody went. It's not like now, hardly anybody goes, but everybody went. The Eskimo girls, we'd all go, all the Eskimos, because we went to we were choirs and everything, you know. And you know, the funny thing about it, as much as we went to Sunday church every Sunday, and we read out of the Eskimo prayer book and Eskimo hymns every Sunday, I never learned one word from it until I got home. When I got home, my granddad gave me an Eskimo prayer book and told me to read it for him. And his eyes were, well, you know, he could read, but I guess, well, I always read the English books to him,
yeah.
You know, just because I really dearly loved my granddad. And I used to read to him, and he'd tell me if I read in Eskimo, he'd understand better. And then I had to learn. And then after I got home from school, I can read and write in Eskimo.
But you didn't learn it in school.
I didn't learn it in school. And that's a funny thing about a lot of us now. A lot of the girls I went to school with, the boys I went to school with, they can speak and read and write in English, but they can't read or write one word in Eskimo.
And you owe that to your grandfather.
I owe that to my grandfather. My granddad said he went to school in Herschel Island. He learned ABCD. Forwards and backwards, that's all he learned, to count up to 100, that's all he learned. And he can read, and he can write, and he can speak pretty good in English. Very good. I mean, some broken words, but very good English. And my mother, when I got home from school in 1950, I took all I had was a Bible in the house. There was an old dusty Bible laying around in the house. And some of my old school scribblers that's got some empty pages in them. And a dictionary, my dictionary.
That's what you brought home from school in 50?
No, I didn't bring it home. It was always in the house. My granddad always had a dictionary.
Uh-huh.
And he had a basic English Bible. you know, very easy to understand. And I took these three things, and these old scribblers were mine from the summers before, you know. I always kept my things very nicely, so I always had them put away. And, you know, they came to use. All I had to do was get some pencil and a couple of erasers, and I sat down, and about 2 hours a day, I tell Joe, write your name, J-O-E, J-O-E. And I get him to do that, and I taught him how to read and write. And he can, today he can look after books, he can be a bookkeeper. All he had is a dictionary, a Bible, and an old scribbler. And same with my mom. They can read and write in English and speak, and they can read and write and speak in Eskimo.
You mean you taught them?
I taught them how to do this in English.
In English, yes.
My mom was, well, she knew a little bit, you know, brokenly.
Right.
But then I filled her in and get her to do it better. Now she can do it. And it's not the best, but you can understand everything. And Joe, he's good. He was smart. They're born learners. My auntie, I started on her, Annie. She reads brokenly. Some words she doesn't know in between, she jumps to the next word that she knows. And this is very bad, you know. I hope someday, some year, to have more time with her. But you see, I started on her, and she got so far, and then when I got married, and then I quit teaching her, and she's got no more teacher, so that's how far she got. Otherwise, if I had all the time to teach her, she'd be good too, maybe. They were, my family on their side, I'm not bragging, but they were easy to learn. I had school for 5 years and 5 months, and I finished grade 9. And where Donald had school for about 10 years, and he completed grade 7. But he's pretty good, you know. He learned a lot from reading books. And take my husband. He can't read, write, or anything. I taught him to write his own name. I taught him to write numbers. If I spell, I can take a real hard word and I spelled it out. He'll write it down, you know, because he knows the alphabet.
Yes.
I taught him. He didn't even know ABC.
Well,
he went to school for about 3 months and he was sick the whole time, so they just had to send him home. He's the sort that never stay away from home, maybe. I don't know. Never really got
maybe
down
he was
to
homesick.
Him.
Is that what you mean by sick?
I don't think so. My husband is really easy to get sick because my mother-in-law thinks that he was so premature, that's why.
Oh.
Here's some of the stories that she had to tell you. You think they were, I used to think they were so big sometimes, but then now I wonder. You know, I taught him how his alphabet. I taught him how to write his alphabet, how to say it, and I taught him how to count and write the numbers down, but and write his own name. But I can't. I gave up on him. He's hard to learn. He's stubborn. He wants to, but and he's hoping to try and get into night school or whatever school this summer or fall. He's gonna make another try for it, and I'm gonna make every effort to help him. But I tried, and he's so hard to learn. He's really hard. I compare him to my uncles, and you know, I just don't know what. And you know, this what you call these things, Young World on Saturday mornings.
Young World.
You know, where they have
radio.
On the radio.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Where they have these multiply and everything.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he
yeah.
gets the answer in about 2 minutes.
Your
and
husband.
I can't.
Your
I have, I got to get a pencil and paper. And he can say it right up. He's good at figures. But I can never teach him to write a whole sentence.
Can we go back to your trip to Tuck? You were saying that in the summertime,
yeah, we
when the
went
schooners came in, I imagine what you were going to say was that on those schooners, you went up to Tuck?
Yeah,
to Tuck.
Well, you see, after ratting, when the boats all came into Aklavik, and they had, always they had sports late in June.
Oh.
They never waited for July 1. Why? Because the schooners, they didn't fool around staying in Aklavik long. They went as soon as possible, as soon as sports. They all stayed in for sports. Everybody joined in those days. Madanon, Indians, Eskimos, everybody for the whole town. And as soon as sports was over, the Eskimos had to all go down to Whitefish. This was their custom. They all went down to Whitefish Station to hunt whales. And the ones that didn't have boats, well, they can jump onto the other boat. The Nunatamiuks, that was what I mean. They're all Nunatamiuks in the Delta. See, the Tuk people, they hunt whales right from Tuk. But all these people, now that's living in Delta, used to all go down to Whitefish Station, Kendall Island. I don't know, about 3-4 different names of things. They all went down whaling. And the ones that didn't have a boat, of course, they helped buy gas and, you know, they bought their own supplies, but they helped to buy gas, and you didn't have to do this if you couldn't afford it. They'd let you come in if you couldn't afford it. Because why? You don't just go in that boat for nothing. When you get down to Whitefish Station, all the women get together, all the men go out hunting together, all the women pitch in and do their own share of work. And that oil is not split up, or because this man owned the boat, or was the pilot or the engineer, he didn't get more than the others. They split it up equally, regardless if you didn't have that boat or not.
The blubber and everything.
The blubber, they split everything evenly. The boat didn't get more because it was the boat, or they didn't carry you for your weight down.
They didn't get anything special?
No. They all believed in splitting up the same way. And then in one of these boats we'd go. But as far as to Whitefish Station, and my granddad always went whaling. But this was one time when we're Tuk people. So being so near to Tuk, then we go right on to Tuk. Later in the years, of course, granddad got a small boat. But in those days, we hitched a ride on one of the boats. Mom or granddad pay for gas and everything. And we went down to Tuk, Whitefish Station. And from Whitefish Station, it's just about 2 hours down to Tuk with a boat. Then we'd go down to Tuk. And they leave us there. But they were always very faithful to come back and pick us up in the fall before going back up to the Delta. And that was free trips, you know, didn't cost us anything. Of course, they left us with Cyril. My mom had stayed riding with them. My granddad had a tent. He always pitched a tent and they whaled from down there and fished. And we never were out of oil or whale oil or anything.
Did you ever go to Whitefish Station in those years?
I never did. The first time I ever went down whaling, well, John Dillon, he never goes whaling. And a lot of times in the summer I helped my auntie, then she started raising her own family, you see, so I pitched in and helped her as much as I could. But I was always at Tuk every summer. Now I can't really, it was about 1951 or 52, in the early 50s, there was about 50 or 51 that the Wingnick family were all struck with TB, except for Margaret, the youngest one, Jimmy. Jimmy and Margaret and Jenny, except for those. Then they all went in the hospital for TB. Granddad, Ruth, Helen. Helen was already married then. Bessie was already in Charles Council with TB about 2 years before that, and she was still there. And, well, like I told you, when there's no Ruth around, there's no life for me. So when there's no Wingnick family down there, there's a lot of relations we got down in Tuk, I guess, but I had no reason to go back down to Tuk for. And my granddad felt he had nothing to go down to Tuk for anymore. And in the early days, in the summertime, you see, it always comes back to me, as I think I remember. But the earliest memories I had of the Delta was my granddad. Like I said, he's always working.
Yeah.
He started working for the mission. He ran the mission boat in the summertime. That's the Messenger. The name of the boat was Messenger. And he took it, they took school children down to Tuk, you know, on Kiglovak or Ranger Station, the ones that staying far. He took them, he piloted the boat down and back, And then in the fall he piloted back down and back again. I mean, this wasn't just four trips he made. Of course, some of the teachers wanted to go for a holiday or something. They never went back out, the ones that didn't go back out. So he'd always go down. He piloted that boat all the time. And then during summer we stayed in this Anyarik because that's the best fishing place, better than my granddad's place. So we all stayed there, a family. And it was real nice, us trips to see this place. Anyarik, like I told you, it's right in the Mackenzie, the boats are passing there always. And granddad always stopped on his way down. And that was the best time because we'd get parcels and boxes to open.
From whom would they come?
My granddad would buy them from a Klavik, you see, or from Tuck. And when we went down to, one day I remembered I got, you know, these crepe dresses, they're heavy when they're washed, eh?
Yeah.
My mom made a white one for me, beige color. And I remember it very well, and I had real shiny new rubber boots, Alec and I, my brother. Alec is about 3 years younger than myself too. But along this creek where I showed you, it's very strong current. That's why it's good fishing. You see how from here, this wasn't that far, then it was maybe about this far. So you can see it's not very far to get to the Mackenzie, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So naturally it has to have strong current because it's running this way and this way, and here's the Mackenzie, and this is very strong current. And some places in here is not deep, not very deep. And Donald, my uncle, used to swim around always. He's a good swimmer. He's always swimming. We used to stay across the river here, and a boat, canoe paddle very slowly beside him. He can swim across and back. You know, he's always, how he learned this? Because he always did, that's the only pastime he's got. You see, us children were pretty small for him. And there's no other children his age, so he spent his time in water. And I bothered him, Uncle, teach me to swim.
You?
Yeah. And I know he says, don't weigh yourself in water. He says, try and make yourself float. He says, feel light. He gave me that and he told me to weigh my paddle my arms and my feet, and I told him, okay, that's good enough, I know now. He, you know, was pretty silly when I was small, but anyway, they all went in, the tents for meal, I guess, or something or another, they were eating anyway, and, you know, there's not very many rocks or pebbles or anything in those along the delta, you know. When you see them, you think they're so precious. And I says, and some of this now along the point where the current cuts strong, you know, the bank is pretty cut bank, and it's deep in those places. And there was a little spot of mud, I guess, that had fallen from the side, and I thought it was solid. And I seen a pebble. I says, Alec, look at that pebble down there. And you know, there's one thing I always told my children, is Alec, I never remembered a good fight with Alec. We were real close. And then 13 years old, when Alec was 13 years old, we were always fighting. Never got along. I wouldn't get it, even to today, my cousins, the Dillons. They dare not say one word back to me. If they do, they get a real good spanking. And you know, they'll talk back to their mother. Their mother cowers and she shuts up. She lets them get away with it. But I go in there and I tell them something, they dare not answer me back. And this is, and my brother Archie is staying with me. He's 17 as of last Friday. But last September, I gave him a real good spanking because he said one word back to me. And Alec says, you know, we were very close. I really liked him always. And he says, Alec, this is one time I remembered he did something to me bad. He says, Jesse, please get that pebble for me. He says, you're bigger than me. You could reach it. I'll just hold you, he says. I says, no, I might fall. He says, no, I'll hold you. So he took me by the sweater. and I reached down, but I guess he slipped, his footing slipped, and that seemed like he pushed me. And then I hear hollering, screaming. I was in, getting washed away. I went under, and I came up, and I went under. And you know the funniest thing? I thought it was the most beautiful thing in water. It was just bright to me. It was the most best feeling I ever had. I didn't want to come back up. But then I heard my auntie screaming, so I and Donald says, make like you're going to lift yourself up, Jesse. He was telling me this, so I did this, and I should come way up. And this was the third time that I had went in and up. And they tried, you know, in their excitement, they couldn't do nothing. They tried reaching me with willows, and I couldn't, and here I was getting washed out. And this canoe, you know, they were so scared and nervous, they couldn't push the canoe. There's just the women there, Annie, my granny Charlotte, and my mom Mary. And Joe was married to Nellie. Nellie Sydney, she's staying down here with Lazarus Lester. No?
Oh, yeah.
They separated in the early '40s. No, about the middle 40s, they split up. And then she was with us, you see, my Uncle Joe was in a Clavick working, or working with my granddad or something. We had no men there.
Mm-hmm.
And then my aunt was crying, and you know, the worst thing that hit me was Alec crying. And I thought, poor Alec, he didn't mean it, and he's really going to get a scolding about it, and it's not even his fault. So I tried. Donald says, do like I told you, Jesse. He says, so I tried. And the thing I know, I was paddling, and I just grabbed mud, and I passed out, and I didn't know anything for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I swallowed so much of that water, drank so much of it. But I tell you, the funny thing struck me was I thought, I didn't want to come back out of that water.
Mm-hmm.
And only my brother is going to get scolding for nothing. You know, it wasn't his fault. His footing slipped. He didn't really push me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want him to get scolded for something he didn't do, so I thought, well, I'll go back up anyway, you know.
And what did they say afterwards?
And, well, they were all, you know, my granddad. It was just after I got better, about 2 days after I got better, that granddad came back. He went down to station and back. And then that's when I just started coming to, and boy, my granddad was really going to take it out with Alec. But I told them, I said, it wasn't his fault. It was, that's that mud. I said, he slipped on it, you know. I wouldn't let them touch him, because I knew that it wasn't his fault. But things like that, you know, happen and come back. And I could tell you a real funny thing happened in 1944. That's 1 year after I went to school. We went to... Before I went to school. That was the year Elizabeth was born, Elizabeth Caglet. I don't know even with what ship now. But we went to Horton River from Tuck. I guess my granddad wanted to make another go, I often think, anyway, of coast life. So we went to Horton River. And when we were in Horton River, we went there in a fall, towards fall. And shortly after we stayed, I remember Horton River had one big house and a warehouse. This was a Hudson Bay house, you know, long ago. I guess they tried to put up a building there, Hudson Bay Post there. But maybe no people came around too much, because then they had to close down. The downstairs was used for the store, and it had an upstairs for living quarters. But you know, it can be without no fuel stove. Well, you know how it is, that you can have the upstairs heated. So they plucked up the top, and later though, they reopened it in the spring when it started getting warm. For the first start, they plucked up the top, and all the my aunt was so scared always. We was in the front, in the last room. They had partitions in it. The first, when you went in, there was a room here. That is, we stayed in tent until it got cold, and then we moved to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were moving, that day we were moving, it must have been pretty cold. Because the day we were moving, that's December 6th, Lisbeth was born. I thought, well, gee, why, you know, I never stayed away from Granddad. I didn't want to leave Granddad. Why isn't Granddad coming with us? My mom and the rest, then they were in a delta. Just my granddad, Charlotte, and their oldest daughter, Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, my Aunt Annie, and Jake, Ethel Pfeffer, and I think they had two children, but one was staying in Tuck, and they had one. That's Agnes Pfeffer. She's now Agnes Carpenter in Sax Harbor. And Moses Albert and Abraham Carpenter. And Cliff Hagen, the husband of Margaret. I didn't want to leave Granddad. I never ever remembered being away from Granddad. I didn't want to leave him, but my auntie said, Granddad's going to come tomorrow. Your granddad is going to be here. She says, but there was somebody stayed behind there to be midwife, as I later understood. She was in labor. My grandmother was in labor, so that's why she wasn't moving with us at the same time. And we couldn't delay or move any longer. We were waiting for her, you see, that's why it took us long, I guess. But then a few days after that, my grandmother came with a new baby, you know, and I always wondered where she got it from. And the room was the first room, and then the stairway, and then the room under the stairs was the Pfeffers, Jake Pfeffer. And then the room in the corner was my aunt and mine. I always slept with my auntie, always. And she's so scared, she's got her window all nailed up with deerskin from the inside. In case a polar bear sticks his nose in. But I never remembered. If you ever believed in ghost stories, your Red Annie's one that can tell you a lot of them that happened to her. There was a bed out in the front for the boys there, Moses, Abraham, and Cliff. But most of the time they weren't home, you know, they traveled around. But anyway, I remember they all went. We ran out of stuff, you know, due to the weather, blizzard blowing. They went to Stanton or Anderson River or not. I don't know. Stanton, I think they said it was Stanton. Then anyway, they went somewhere for supplies. They had, you know, it took them a few days. And they couldn't go, and we were getting low on supplies because of storm. And finally, they did go. And, you know, it just stayed good for a couple of days. And the time they were should be expecting them back, then wind came up again and blowed and blowed and blowed. And we had nothing to eat. We had a little, what little they had, they saved for us children. Then there was Winnie, myself, Agnes, there was three of us children. What little they had, they saved for us children. And you know, they were living on tea that's being boiled over and over. They had no stuff. And my stomach was sore and I'm wanting to eat. And my granny, even our fish supply, our meat supply ran out. They couldn't go hunting because it was real bad for a long time, the weather. And she looked and looked in that old warehouse for fish, and there was nothing. And the water, you know, in the coast, like the ice go out once in a while and back, you know, and then cost them, then they can get seals. And this hadn't even happened. And it was real hard time. And I remember laying down. My auntie, all my life, I've always remembered her to read her Bible, always read her Eskimo Bible prayer book. She always said prayer all the time, I remembered her too. And one night she was telling me a story about something I don't remember anyway, but it was from Bible. And I remembered her really clearly praying that, you know, for the sake of us children, that she wished that some food should be given to us soon. And they were worried about Granddad and the rest because they got caught in this storm. They were expected back and they don't know what can happen to them, you know. Could freeze. They should have a lot of supplies. And they had one thing to make it worse is Granddad's old leader came back alone. And My granny, I remember her, you know, she was hardly getting any milk to breastfeed her newborn baby. And then that night I laid down and I remembered my auntie praying and everything, and I thought, gee whiz, if only I could just even see food. And then I laid down in bed, and my auntie, her bed was this way here, the door is here. She was sleeping on the far side and I was sleeping in the edge. And you know, I was sleeping and something, oh, I just hate, it is kind of dawn, you know, dusk in the morning, you could see clear enough, and yet it was dusk. And something touched my arm, you know, did this to me, and I turned around and I looked, and you know, I knew enough pictures to see, to know what Mary looked like, in a Virgin Mary. And boy, this woman is dressed just like her, just exact. But you know, the funny thing is she had a tray, a platter, I didn't know what they were then, and these fresh food, you know, like orange apples and things, and she had lake of meat and everything on it, you know, and she held it and she offered it to me, told me to eat this. I told about maybe two or three people about this, because even myself, I find it so hard to believe, you know, and I never told it to a lot of people. I just told maybe two people out of it, and I think you're the third. And she held this and she says, eat. And that was when Cliff Hagin and Jake Pfeffer, they speak English, they're white people. And, you know, they talk in English all the time. And I was trying to learn how to speak in English. And I could just do it brokenly. Eat. She says, eat. And you know, for a little girl hungry stomach, that is real tempting. And I wanted to get my hands out, but I was scared. I started to do this, and something always made me put my hand back. And I wanted to do it so much. And something always seemed like to pull my arm back. And in Eskimo, you know, she says, Nichin, eat me. I shook my head, and I was scared, and I couldn't move. You know, it's like I was frozen. And she turned around. And as she was going out, I heard her feet clicking. This is one thing that my aunt must have really taught me lots. I mean, told me lots of Bible stories about false prophets and things. I often think, you know. But I heard her feet clicking, and I looked, and I thought to myself, as young as I was, well, gee, maybe that's not from God at all. Maybe that's not from angel, because she's walking on the floor. And that's the first thing I thought of, because I heard her feet clicking. And then she did come back, and her tray was even more better this time. Eat. And boy, I wanted to take it, but I wouldn't. Something wouldn't let me do it. And then, you know, I just grabbed my auntie for dear life, and just she was expecting at the time, too. Her oldest child was born out of wedlock. And I held her, and you know, I was scared. I knew enough not to hurt her. And I just holding on to her there, and she says, what you want now? I told her, I seen something. And she says, who? I says, Mary. And you know, I picked up her Bible, and she has pictures in them. I says, just like this. But you know, I said, she's walking, she's got shoes on. And my auntie thought I was just being silly. And she says, you come on this side of to the wall side. You know, she thought I was just having a nightmare from being so hungry. But I wouldn't go back to sleep. And just as I pretty near went back to sleep, I just felt, you know, some presence of something. So I looked, and here was this person, same dress, but she had a halo. And this is another thing I noticed about the first one, didn't have no halo. Mm. The second one had a halo. And I looked down, she was above the ground. No, and she had nothing on her. She says, tell your granny in Eskimo to go to the warehouse. In that corner, there's three fish, enough to do you tonight, granddad's coming. Lots of meat, she says, tonight, late tonight. And she says this in Eskimo, you know, and I understood this, that I couldn't even use the exact words that she used. And I ran to granny's room. I wasn't scared anymore. I went to my granny's room and I told her there's fish in a warehouse. And she says, my granny, you know, she always thought that was pretty silly always. She says, you get back to sleep. She says, go back. And there's nothing to get up for. But I bothered my aunt until she got up, and they all thought I was silly. But you know, I just went to that warehouse, and I stayed there until my granny started digging, and I told her exactly where it was, and she wouldn't believe me. So she started digging from down that side with a shovel, and she dug all that, and when she came up to the exact spot I was standing on, there was 3 fish underneath. And Granddad and them came home with loads of meat that night, and stuff from store.
Digging through the snow, I didn't get that.
She shoveled snow. You see when the warehouse, the door is open, you see?
Oh, yeah.
It's half open, so the snow drift get in.
Yeah, yeah.
And that causes it, the door can't close because of the snow underneath there. And you know, when snow drift goes in, it can pat pretty solid to the floor. And this, you have to shovel that out. And this is something, I mean, I often wondered what would have happened if I ate from the first tray.
Yeah.
And you know, it sounds so funny, even to myself, a lot of times when I think of it, and it sounds so funny. I never told even my children, or I told Colin once. I forgot what other couple was it that I told about this dream. But it's funny, you know. And a lot of things my aunt knows. I don't know if you believe in these things, but in the olden days they used to believe these ghost stories always in that maybe a woman could turn into a weasel or a fox. Mm. You've ever heard those?
Some.
Yeah. And my aunt is just full of prunes.
And she
about
told you these? Annie told you these
yes,
stories?
Well, I mean, this one I just told you is true,
oh,
is what I seen.
That.
But Annie,
yeah.
My auntie, well, we'd sit many nights, and my mom, my aunt, my uncle, they all, I don't know if, but a lot of times I let it hash around my mind and wonder if it's true, but my mom and my uncle, they back her up in story. They seen things like this happen. And sometimes it's so funny. Some of them sound so funny. And my aunt was never scared. She was never, ever scared. She always had Bible with her. She was real strong. I can believe her. And she always read her prayer book. But you know, today, you take her out in the bush, she wouldn't sleep one night alone. She's so scared.
Mm.
And she doesn't see anything now. And in those days she used to see things, and she's never scared, she's brave.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times she says it's because she's gone so far away from reading her Bible and thinks that she's scared. She believes this. But a lot of things are so weird that she tells, just give me the goose pimples when I'm alone.
When you think back about these
uh-huh.
stories.
She's tell us some funny stories happening. And then you see that traveling back from Horton River in spring, after this happened, now I don't know anything again about Horton River. And I do remember that we got to a herder's camp, and this is the herder you read about, or maybe you heard about, that traveling from Tuck with his boat, and his boat was wrecked, and the whole, no, you didn't hear that. His name was Billy Mason. He's a white guy. He was herding for Charlie, they call him Rufus, but his real name is Killy, Charlie Killy. They got a herd, you see, reindeer herd. They used to have this reindeer herd way in there.
This
then
was the
yes, I don't know where this was now. I don't know if it was government, I don't know if it was Charles, but I do know there was a reindeer herd. And we, anyway, from Horton River, we went to a place called Kimixanis. That's there. My grandfather's in-laws or something.
Mm-hmm.
His in-laws, yeah. And this is where I remember my auntie told me to go out and bring in some firewood they were staying in. I don't even remember if it was a house or if it was a tent frame, but it was something anyway. That was where the Kimiksana stay. And my auntie said she used to be so embarrassed about me because I used to go, and they were poor people, and I used to holler, don't they even have sugar? Because I never knew what it was to go without, you know. I always had, except for the time in Horton River, of course, but this wasn't because we couldn't afford it, it was because
right.
of the storm. And don't they ever have any sugar? What about jam? You know, I'd ask for the most ridiculous things that they didn't have, and they were a poor family. And my aunt stayed with them for a while, and she, my granddad wouldn't let her travel anymore because she was so near childbirth. And then she, one morning she says, babe, she says, go out and bring in some firewood. And I went out, you know, and she knows I take my good old time, just taking my time bringing firewood and playing around out for, you know, children are, they can, and I guess I was real absent-minded about things. And by the time I went back in, I heard a baby crying and screaming, and my auntie had given birth to a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what she had shoot me out for, knowing that I'd take my time, she didn't have to worry about me running back in.
With no midwife or anything?
She had a midwife, the Kimiksanas. And